Welcome back to the Mike Dillard Podcast, where we help entrepreneurs like you get the knowledge and skills that you need to bring your dreams to life. You know, I'll bet there's a good chance you've had an idea for a software company at one point or another. I've built two software systems during my career, and I'm working on a third one right now that you will see next year. And I'll just say this, the software business is extremely difficult, but it can also be incredibly lucrative. The key to success is knowing where the landmines are before you step on them. Well, today we're joined by Ryan Kuhn, who is the founder of Avail.co. Ryan created Avail to help make the lives of rental property owners easier. So if you own a rental property or plan to in the future, Avail is what you'd use to find tenants, screen their credit ratings, sign leases, and collect rent all from your smartphone. And the crazy part is that their service is only $5 per month per property. Today, Avail is growing faster than ever, but it certainly did not start out that way. In fact, they had massive challenges when it came to finding their first customers, figuring out how to advertise, figuring out how to find their new clients in a profitable way that would actually grow the business. They had additional challenges when it came to figuring out how much they should charge for their service, and they even had to rename and rebrand the entire company at one point just a few years ago. Well, today, Ryan's going to teach you his biggest lessons learned when it comes to starting and building a software business, and there are some gems in here that are unbelievably valuable no matter what kind of business you own. Now, before we get started today, I have an important opportunity for a handful of you. When you get outside the internet marketing bubble, you quickly realize that every successful company, including businesses just like Avail, make it a priority to build up a strong board of advisors. This is a group of people who can provide you with the strategic advice, experience, and contacts that can dramatically increase your company's growth and overcome your biggest challenges. In fact, I have a board of advisors for my business with three of my mentors on it, and I've also been asked to join the board of several other companies, including DropFunnels, SamCart, and a new startup called InnerX in just the past 90 days alone. Unfortunately, most online entrepreneurs don't understand how to set up a board, and it usually requires giving away equity in your business as compensation to your advisors. Well, many of my customers have reached out at one point or another and asked me if I can offer some kind of one-on-one coaching to essentially serve as an advisor to them and their businesses. I don't do that, but I do want to give those of you who want my help the ability to get it. So this last month, I decided to offer a few of my customers the chance to have me on your board of advisors. No, I don't need or want equity in your company, but I am going to help you just as if I was your actual business partner. I'm going to be there to help you solve your biggest business challenges in a single conversation, to introduce you to the same people who run and scale all of my marketing campaigns, to show you how to grow your audience like I have, to personally review your marketing funnel, your website, your business plan, and your offer, and even provide you with a chance to invest in startups alongside me. Whatever you need help with, I'm going to be there to provide it. If you would like to learn more about this opportunity to have me on your board of advisors, you can book a call with my team by going to mikedillard.com/advisor. And that is mikedillard.com/advisor. Please note that these spaces are extremely limited. Now, as for qualifications, we have two different groups that I am working with. If you're brand new, that is absolutely okay. I created an option and a group designed just for people who are in your particular circumstance and who need the kind of help that you need when you're just getting started. Now, if you're more experienced and if you're already doing 6, 7, or 8 figures in revenue, there is a separate board of advisor group that I have put together just for you that is extremely limited. There's only a few spots available. So if you'd like to learn more and if you'd like to take me up on this offer, just go to mikedillard.com/advisor today. Now, without further ado, please help me welcome Ryan Kuhn. Ryan Kuhn, welcome to the Mike Dillard Podcast, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thanks so much for having me, Mike. Excited to be talking with you.
Absolutely. So you are the founder of Avail.co, which is a software platform used for real estate owners who are renting out their properties to help manage the properties and their tenants. I'm always interested in talking to founders who've developed software platforms, because I've made an attempt to do that 2 or 3 times in my career. Some of them were successful in some ways, but they eventually fell apart because I didn't have enough experience in that area. And so today I wanted to really focus on 2 different topics with you. First and foremost, I just want to talk about this, your story and the story of Avail and how you came up with this idea and how you've developed it as a software platform and what you've learned. And then two, recently you guys went through a massive rebrand. And that is something that I have also done in my career. And it's something that I think every entrepreneur is either going to think about or they're going to actually go through with it and do it. And any lessons or guidance that you can provide everybody about a rebrand, I think would be unbelievably valuable.
Yeah, I'm excited to be talking about all of those things.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, give us a little bit of background about yourself as an entrepreneur, how you ended up founding Avail and how you came up with the idea.
Yeah. So real quick, kind of my background, as I mentioned earlier when we were talking, live in Chicago right now, but I grew up just outside of Chicago in the suburbs, went to school in the Midwest, grew up in their family around entrepreneurs. During college, ran a painting company that we painted houses over the summer. But really, after I finished college, I moved up to Chicago in 2007 in the summer. I took a job with a large investment bank. That was right before the big financial crash.
Right.
And what happened, it was interesting. I mean, I was fortunate. I was able to keep my job through that period. I stayed in investment banking for about 4 years. It was exactly what you've heard the investment banking is. It's the crazy 90-100-hour work weeks, the travel, the nonstop go-go lifestyle. And through that time period, I was fortunate not only to keep a job, but I also, on the side, in my little bit of free time, invested in some single-family homes that I was renting out. And ultimately, after getting through the financial crisis, by 2011, 2012, the world had normalized. Things were in some ways becoming more boring than they were when things were all hectic and haywire. And ultimately, I realized one day that I didn't want to wear a suit and work on LaSalle Street for an investment bank for my whole career. Mm. And that was the aha moment. And I spent the next 6 months or so thinking through, what could I do? What problems do I have that I could go solve if I was to become an entrepreneur and go back and start a business? And I kept coming back to the rental properties that I own and manage. And the way that I was owning and managing those properties was really through a combination of spreadsheets, text messages, pen and paper, paper rent checks, smoke signals, anything and everything you can imagine. And I kept thinking to myself, I'm like, there's got to be a better way to manage properties. So ultimately, that was what led me to kind of focus in on this part of my life, to leave a lucrative six-figure career in banking and start a tech company. That was kind of how that all came about. And then I think one of the things that I did along the way that was interesting and a lot of people don't do is I actually decided to learn how to code, learned Ruby on Rails before actually starting the company. So left banking, said, hey, I'm going to invest whatever the number was, $40,000, $50,000 of my own money into this business. And I could either go option A of hiring someone to build software for me, either here in the States, or I could hire someone overseas. Or option B is I could just kind of live on that savings. And while I'm kind of like paying myself in a way, learn how to code. And that's a path that I went.
That's why you are a smart man, my friend.
So I don't know if it was smart. I mean, a lot of sleepless nights in there.
Well, what's really interesting in my experience building software, I built a social community, a niche social community for entrepreneurs over a decade ago called Better Networker. And it was built on Drupal, and I had the vision for it. And I don't know how to code. I never went and learned how to code. It never even occurred to me to go learn how to code because math and numbers have never jived with my brain. And that was a challenge because code is its own language. And so if you don't know how to code and you're starting a software business, working with an engineer, software engineer, is kind of like trying to build a company with someone who speaks Spanish. And, yep. And if you don't speak the language, you're not quite sure what they're talking about. You're not really sure how to judge their work or performance. You don't know if they're doing a good job or not. And eventually what happened with Better Networker is, ironically, it was unbelievably successful. We were one of the top, I believe in the heyday, one of the top 2,000 most trafficked websites in the world on Alexa.
Wow.
And we had over 1 million pages of user content submitted on the site, videos, articles, all that good stuff. And it just fell apart because it was essentially built by one individual who just stacked plugin after plugin after plugin. And, you know, once you've got 20 plugins, you know, built on a social community that's running that, one of them goes out of date or puts an update out, it cracks the entire thing. And we ended up having to spend $20,000, $30,000 a month constantly repairing the site just to keep it working. And so we eventually just pulled the plug on it because it wasn't worth the money to keep building it in that fashion. So I think that is unbelievably smart that you went and did that. From a software perspective, obviously, did you write the code yourself?
I think along the way, I did a couple of things that was maybe smart. So number one, I'm one of the founders. So I did have a co-founder who joined me in the early days of building the business. He's still really close friend and with the company today. So Lawrence and I did together write the first lines of code. We built the MVP, the minimum viable product, ourselves. But fortunately, now we've got a 25-person team, and about a third to half of that team is on the product and engineering side. So we built the initial product, but we certainly have more professional, skilled, trained people writing code today.
Awesome. And when you launched it, obviously, you know, priority number two, let's get users for the platform. How did you go about that?
Yeah. So again, we Avail is this platform, this product that really is built to make the rental process easier for independent landlords and their tenants. And Mike, we're catering to people like us who have full-time jobs. These are doctors, bankers, lawyers, firefighters, consultants. They happen to own a couple of properties on the side, either as a way to build passive income or to save for retirement. But what's challenging about this market that we are building a product for is that while there's a ton of people out there who fit this profile, there's about 8 million individuals in the country who own passive income properties. It's really not how they describe themselves. And no one's out there thinking, I'm a landlord. They think, I'm a CPA, and I happen to own a couple properties. So getting those initial users, and frankly, still getting users today, is one of our biggest challenges. The way that we got the early adopters was really by understanding the psychology and understanding the problems that these people had. So what worked really well for us was content marketing. So putting out blog posts about different things, different questions and problems that landlords encountered. So what questions should I ask a tenant? When? What do I do if rent is late? So we started creating all of that really good content. We would email it out to our user base. They would ultimately share it. And over time, we've just amassed this user base. Today, there's about 200,000 individual owners across the country who use Avail.
Wow, that's amazing. And so it just grew organically, or did you guys dive into paid advertising at some point? Because that's 200,000 people is amazing.
Yeah, we've been fortunate. We've tried a bunch of different things, and like any entrepreneur, we've got plenty of battle wounds and battle scars about things that have worked and things that haven't. Content works really well. Organic traffic works well. Email marketing works well. We have dabbled in paid search, so SEM, Google AdWords, Bing ads. We've done some paid social with Facebook and Twitter. There's different things that are in there that work and don't work. I think one of our biggest lessons is that individual landlords aren't out there searching for kind of all-in-one landlord software, but they are searching for things around major pain points that they have. So like collect my rent online would be a search term that you could Google right now, and you'd hopefully find us towards the top of page one.
Very cool. Do you have an affiliate program?
We do. We launched it about a year ago. And so anyone out there who's looking, has content, wants to drive people to us, we do have an affiliate program. That model works really well, both for us and for our affiliate partners.
I was going to say, one of the ways that I would probably approach it, assuming you did have an affiliate program, is to go out and start contacting all of the people in the information/education space in the real estate niche and putting this in their marketing funnel, in their email follow-up campaigns. That seems to me like it'd be quite effective.
Yeah, I think that the affiliate model works really well. I mean, it obviously aligns incentives. And beyond that, if you're putting out a good product, it really can be a good win-win-win, where obviously we benefit from getting the user, the affiliate benefits from earning revenue and commissions there. And then ultimately it's the consumer that we both then share that is benefiting from it too.
Yeah, absolutely. What are some of the biggest landmines that you've experienced so far throughout this journey?
Oh boy, where to start? Well, I think number one, and you kind of hit on it earlier, is we made the mistake that a lot of first-time entrepreneurs, first-time founders make, is we put, I would say, 80% of our time and effort into building product and 20% into building an audience. And in hindsight, what we should have done is the inverse, where 80% of our time and effort and energy should have gone towards thinking through how do we connect with landlords, and then 20% of the time and effort focused on the product. Because ultimately, if you can't reach the customer, it doesn't matter how good your product is.
Interesting. Because the feedback you always traditionally get in the software industry is exactly what you did, 80% on the product, right? If the product is good, word spreads and it's word of mouth, and it just becomes kind of the de facto. So that's the first time I've ever heard that, which is really fascinating. Makes sense to me as a marketer, but yeah.
Yeah, I think it's especially true in this like massively fragmented world that we live in, where it's these individual landlords. I think instead of focusing on that minimum viable product, we would have benefited by focusing on the minimum viable audience. And so building up an audience and a community of landlords, whether that was through a blog, through an email database or something, we should have started there and then built the product afterwards.
Right. It looks from your pricing page, it looks like you have a freemium model where you can sign up for free.
Yeah. So we do. We've changed up our pricing a few times over the years. What we ultimately landed on was this freemium model, where similar to like a Slack or a Zoom or a Spotify, Dropbox, like any of those other really well-known tech companies, we do have a freemium model. Our product is completely free for both landlords and tenants for basic functionality. And then if you decide that you want premium functionality, there are some premium plans that you can upgrade to, but there's certainly ways to get value out of our product without upgrading.
I'm really shocked at how inexpensive your service is, $5 a unit per month. I'm kind of flabbergasted by that. I would imagine paying at least 20, like $19 a month. How did you guys come to that pricing?
Yeah, we really came to that pricing, I would say, through rigorous A/B testing.
Okay.
I know that talking with a fellow marketer, you'll appreciate this, but
yep,
we've tested everything under the sun, from completely free. Like we actually did run a test where our product completely free, no matter what, for all features and functionality. And we've tested all the way up to maybe $19.99 a month per unit. And what we ultimately landed on is that perfect intersection between supply and demand, where we're kind of maximizing the output and the revenue of the model.
I would assume that you've also split tested the sign up process quite extensively. You know, I can always tell that when I look at a SaaS platform's sign up flow. You go to your homepage, it's create your free account. All you do is enter your email address and that's it. And that to me is a huge sign that you guys have done a lot of testing. You've removed as much resistance as you possibly can to get that first step taken. Walk us through some of the lessons that you've learned when it comes to the sign up flow.
Well, number one, we've gotten really good in-house user experience design team that focuses on optimizing all of those things. We've looked at the different parts of the customer journey. And I think throughout, when we launched the product in 2015 and over the last 5 years or so, there've been a lot of ongoing tests that we've done. I think one of the interesting things that we've stumbled upon recently is that there are ways that you can make the process too frictionless. So that's one of those like really interesting ones that we've been studying recently. But around the sign up flow, the sign up process, yeah, there's just too many people don't put
I was going to say energy. Real quick, Yeah, I apologize for interrupting you. I just want to make sure, when you say too frictionless, what's an example of that?
Looking at maybe a product that people would know much maybe better than ours is, if you think about, like, when you go to kayak, and in a normal environment, when we're not in the COVID pandemic, but you go to kayak and you search for a hotel price or an airline price, and they show that like spinning wheel, and it shows gathering airfare and doing all this work. That's manufactured. Mm. They don't need that. And what's interesting is, when you get behind the product, they've actually got all the pricing information instantly. But what they've done is they've said, look, if we provide the pricing too quickly, then people won't trust it. Right. And with our product, there's those similar things where maybe it's around scheduling a rent payment, where we tell them on the renter side, let's say they schedule a rent payment, we can actually introduce some friction there around scheduling the payment, making sure that you've got the funds in your account, reporting the payment to the credit bureaus. And then only after a few seconds of that spinning will it say payment submitted successfully.
Interesting. So yeah, so it looks like the system, it is doing it, but it looks like it's actually working. You're getting to see the gears turn rather than just the instant end result.
Yeah.
Very cool. Interesting stuff. Have you guys taken on any VC capital, or are you just bootstrapping still?
Yeah, no, we have taken on outside capital. We've to date raised about $5.5 million in outside funding. We've been fortunate to have some really supportive investors behind us. And those investors, for anyone in the audience, I would say, look for investors that can add additional value beyond just writing a check. Right. And we've been fortunate to have that.
What would you say is one of the most important value add characteristics that you look for in a potential investor?
I think the biggest thing, or I would say there's actually two. So number one, has the investor been in my shoes before? Like, can they relate? Can they share experiences? Can they educate me? Can they help me avoid mistakes that maybe they made themselves once upon a time? Mm. That's number one. Number two is really the value of the network. And I know that you mentioned running a online community around networking before, so you'll appreciate this. But when we look at investors, it's really all about who are they connected with that we could potentially work with or leverage those connections, kind of work with, get value from those relationships.
Yeah, makes a ton of sense. Awesome. Thank you for that. So yeah. Tell us about the rebrand, because that's a huge decision, a lot of big ramifications. It's something that I recently did with the podcast last year. It was the Self-Made Man podcast, and I rebranded to the Mike Dillard podcast after 5 million downloads, which is a lot of momentum to pull the plug on and try to transition.
Yeah.
So tell us about your rebrand and what you learned from that.
Yeah. So our rebrand occurred about 2 years ago. So it was in 2018. We had been live for about 3 years. We had, at the time, probably 50,000 landlords who were on our platform using the product, getting value out of it, and maybe another 100,000 renters. So we had this pretty sizable community of 150,000 engaged people. But what happened around that time is, we were probably a team of 10 or 12 people. And as the founder, I started looking around and recognizing that the old name, the old brand of the company was Rentolutions. And the way that came about is, you go back to when Lawrence and I started the company, and it was really this like after. So we said Rentolutions. It's rental solutions, smush them together. You got Rentolutions. It describes exactly what we're doing. And most importantly, the domain, rentolutions.com, $11.99 on GoDaddy.
I was just going to say that. Most importantly, the domain was available.
Yes. So that's what we did. We didn't spend any time thinking through kind of purpose of mission statement, of company values, like, who are we? What are we trying to do? Who are we doing it for? Like, we didn't to our detriment, didn't think about any of those things. So here we are 24 months later, or 24 months ago, sitting in our office, and I'm looking around and I'm like, we've got this amazing group of 12 people on our team. We're servicing this like really large community of 150,000. But of the 12 people on our team, like no one was really emotionally bought into what we were doing. We had just this like really cold, sterile feeling, like company name and brand and identity. And I really recognized that things weren't going the right direction. And it was really just more of a gut instinct, a gut feeling. And it wasn't just like a company name, because I think that's a mistake that a lot of entrepreneurs make, is they think, oh, I'll just rebrand the company. And what do they mean? They mean change the name. I think about branding is so much more than just the name. So we really had to, as we were going through that process, we worked with one of the top branding firms here in Chicago. And what we really did is we embarked on this like 6 to 8 month process of really tearing apart, who are we as a company? Who are we serving? What are we providing to them? What's our mission? What's our values? What do we believe in? What do we want the company identity to be? And it was really only after uncovering all of those things that we could really start thinking about outward expressions of the brand, like name, colors, logo, any of those other things that most people typically think about as branding.
How did it go? How did you roll it out to your existing users and all of that?
So certainly things to do and things to not do. We made the mistake, I think, for us. We were all here on a Tuesday night in our office at about 1 a.m. and we like flipped the switch, and we had rebuilt our entire product with the new branding, new colors, new identity. And we sent an email and we flipped the switch. And what happened then was really awful. And all of our SEO value that we had accumulated and built up basically went to zero. Mm. So one of those things to not do.
Yeah. So what would you do differently this time? What could you do differently to avoid that from happening, even just from an SEO perspective?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think fortunately our users were receptive. So we didn't, I would say, fortunately, knock on wood, we didn't lose many customers through that process, but it just slowed down the pace of growth temporarily for about 6 months. In hindsight, what I would have done is probably done more of a slow transition, where maybe I would have had the two websites, let them coexist for a while, and maybe do more of a gradual transition. But that was something back then that no one that we talked with had really been through before. And we talked with other companies that had rebranded. No one brought up this problem that we ultimately encountered.
So it's, you guys are Avail.co. What's the story with Avail.com? Do y'all own that?
We don't. Avail.com is one of those vanity URLs that unfortunately has a large price tag behind it. Mm. So we have not gone out and purchased that one yet. And even Avail.co, we had to spend somewhere in the low five figures to acquire.
Does that not concern you at all if someone were to buy the .com and put who knows what there?
I think 10 years ago it would have. I think a lot of people maybe 10 years ago would have navigated around the web through kind of typing in a URL.
Yeah.
But I think nowadays there's so much that occurs in the way that people navigate the web these days is through just links and stuff, that it doesn't concern me as much as maybe it should.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just ask it because it's a debate you run into all the time. There's lots of brands that I've come up with that I'm really excited about using, but I won't buy it if I can't get the .com, because my fear is that I would build up this business and this brand, and then somebody would come in and maybe even a competitor would buy the .com and then just redirect to their site and siphon off a ton of our business. And so, yeah, it's a risky.
Oh boy, I'm going to have nightmares tonight.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just a risky proposition for sure. So I thought that was really fascinating. Thanks for kind of filling us in on that. So what else from a rebrand perspective, if somebody's thinking about doing that for themselves these days, you guys went through an agency. I believe you found a lot of value by working with that agency. I'm sure it was not cheap to do that. Was it worth the money? Could you not have felt like you could have done this on your own? Walk us through that.
Well, I think for us, and it's a good question, something that was hotly debated at the time, we made the decision to hire an agency for two reasons. I think number one, this was not like branding and thinking about those things was not our specialty. It's not what we're best at. And number two, we're first-time founders. It's our first time going through this. And so anytime that we've encountered things like that, we've typically said, let's go out and work with someone who's been there and done it before. Branding was that type of thing where we said, look, we're going to do it once. We'd rather do it right. We don't want to have to like screw this up and come back. And at the time, we had an existing customer base. So it would have been a huge letdown for them had we screwed up that process. So we actually went out, we interviewed a handful of firms, we picked one, and I definitely would do that again.
Cool. Are they the ones that came up with the name, or was that you guys?
So they are not the ones that came up with the ultimate name. We had been working with the firm, and things were going smoothly, and they had guided us through a lot of the values, the purpose, the mission, and stuff. And then naming, for whatever reason, took, I would say we spent probably 6 weeks with this firm in trying to brainstorm and come up with names. And ultimately, we came up with a list of probably 6 to 8 names. And really no one, I would say there were some people on our team that loved a couple of them, but there was no unanimous winner. And so on a Friday afternoon, I made the decision as one of the founders. I said, look, we're going to go down to Walgreens. We're going to pick up a case of beer. We're going to just hang out here in the conference room during happy hour tonight. We're going to spend 2 hours as a company, as a team. We're going to put as many names on the whiteboard as we can and see if we can do better than this agency. And so that was kind of the story. We were talking, we tried to break our brainstorm into different categories. And so one of the categories we were talking about was terms that landlords typically use when they're describing an apartment that they're renting out. And someone shouted out, now available, and now avail. And at that moment, somehow avail stuck.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. It's got a great little ring to it. It's memorable. It's easy to say. It's short, simple. I like it. Like it a lot. Very cool. So from a rebrand perspective, you came up with a name. It's, you know, Avail sounds great. What did that look like from, you know, the nitty gritty of new business cards or letterhead or merchant accounts and bank statements and culture? And, you know, what if some employees were secretly not happy with the name and they felt maybe a little betrayed or something, right? How did y'all deal with all of that?
Yeah, I think fortunately, a lot of the like kind of nitty gritty nuts and bolts business card stuff, we had our design team take care of a lot of those things. That last point that you touched on was, I would say, one of my biggest concerns throughout the whole process is, what would our team think? What would their reactions be? And for people who maybe we didn't select the name or the colors that they preferred, what would they do? How would they react? And I think throughout that entire process, I tried to mitigate some of those things really by almost preemptively kind of having those discussions and trying to foresee problems before they came up and really try to have some open, honest, transparent communication around those things. So I think ultimately people didn't fully love, or there were some people who didn't fully love the name, but by having the transparent conversation, by building trust with people, everyone was fortunately able to rally and get on board with it.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, you guys, how long have you been in business now?
We launched the product about 5 years ago.
Okay. So you got about 5 years of track record. Have you started to get offers to buy you?
We have. we had an offer to sell the company even within probably the first year of starting it. And I think there fortunately is a lot of interest in real estate technology companies. And so from time to time, we've had different offers to sell. But at this point, we're growing fast. We're doubling the business year over year. And most importantly, still having a lot of fun doing it.
Cool. I was going to say, when do you say yes?
Yeah, when there's a big number and or when it's no longer fun.
Right. Very cool. Good problem to have.
Yeah.
Nice. So. And then one last question for you here. How has the whole 2020, you know, circumstances and all their glory affected you guys in any way?
There's a lot going on this year, so I'm trying to unpack that. Well, I think first and foremost, unfortunately, a lot of renters who are our customer's customer are unfortunately being impacted by this.
Right.
Renters disproportionately are being affected by COVID, by the recession. And so I think through this period, we've done a few things. Number one, kind of first and foremost, we said we've got to take care of our team. So we've been working remote. We today have a 25-person team here in the States. We've got some offshore engineers that we work with. So everyone is remote now. Number two, what's been really interesting and good for us, I would say, is that we've been able to be there and be supportive. And even the name Avail means to help or to support and to provide benefit. And so during this period, we've been really active in trying to help the community and help landlords and tenants think through how to best navigate the process. We've also been helpful for a lot of different local, state, and national politicians and lawmakers and policymakers who are crafting legislation that impact the rental market. And then number three, I think that through this process, it's really kind of caused an acceleration in the adoption of real estate technology. So more and more landlords and renters are looking for ways to do things digitally. And so we've been growing even faster during this period than we were pre-COVID.
Wow, that's great. That's really great. I'm happy to hear that. That's a great position to be in as far as a software as a service company goes, you know, and not having a giant office and being on the investment side of commercial real estate, you know, other areas of the industry. Very cool. Very cool. Well, I want to ask you one last big lesson learned here that you can provide everybody with, either from growing and building a software company or the rebrand. What's one big lesson learned that we haven't covered yet that you think would be super useful?
Yeah, I would say the biggest lesson or biggest thing that I've learned overall that we haven't touched on yet is the importance of team and the importance of surrounding yourself with good people. I think there's an old saying or old proverb about, you know, if you want to go fast, go alone. And if you want to go far, go together. And so even from day one of building the company, we focused on really fostering an environment of really good, high quality people who either have skills, experience, those things, but more importantly, share the same values and that are people that we want to work with. So I think for anyone in the audience considering starting a company, it's important to think about who you want to surround yourself, who you want to do business with, who you want to ultimately share in all the wins with.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more, especially in today's environment, more important than ever. Very good. When it comes to building that team, is that your job? I know it was initially. Is it still your job as, you know, one of the co-founders? Or is that a role that you've essentially delegated at this point? I guess the question I'm asking is, who took on the responsibility for identifying the right people, building the culture, and getting them on the bus?
Well, I think there's a couple different kind of roles in there where, in terms of like recruiting and bringing good people in, we really take more of an organizational approach to it where everyone on our team is encouraged to help us find good people for all of our open roles. Everyone on the team has the ability to and is encouraged to kind of screen for different things like fit and those things, but I'm still very involved in all of our hiring decisions. My co-founder Lawrence is as well. We haven't brought anyone onto the team without both my co-founder and I speaking with them, because we do view it as almost our most important responsibility now is continuing to build the team. I think about the engineering, we've been able to delegate and we've brought in professionals who are better at that than us. We've brought in different designers, marketers, customer support people. But the one thing that I don't feel comfortable outsourcing is how do we build the team and foster a culture that we really want to thrive here?
Yeah, makes a ton of sense. One of the biggest transitions every founder is going to have to make is to move away from the idea and the coding and the creation into to team and culture. Is there a particular book or coach or resource that you use to really help you get up to speed on how to do that effectively and successfully?
Yeah, I've got a couple of thoughts there. So number one, our board member, who's a college professor, in addition to being a venture capitalist, he's taught me a lot about organizational structure and how to view team. And I remember one of our first board meetings talking with him, and he really said to me and looked at me and he said, "Ryan, the company really is nothing more than just a framework for everyone on your team to learn and grow and develop the skills that they want. And if you really view the company that way, really as just a opportunity for people to explore, to be curious, to work hard, explore different things that they're interested in, you'll benefit." So I think Cliff's recommendations there have been really impactful. And then as it relates to culture, I think there's a book that I reference a lot called Delivering Happiness. And it's the Zappos story of mm-hmm. how they built a really incredible culture around customer centricity.
Yeah, that book is definitely, you know, among the industry standard. I remember going out and meeting, hanging out with Tony years ago at the Zappos headquarters in Vegas before they were purchased. And man, that thing is just a wealth of knowledge. And Ryan, man, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been super, super valuable. I think this is extremely important stuff for anybody who's building a SaaS business or who, you know, maybe has an idea in their head about doing so in the future. Going through a rebrand was super valuable stuff as well. Obviously, if you own real estate, gang, go to avail.co, check out the software, check out the platform. I can't believe the price. I think it'd be silly not to be using y'all's service if you're doing things manually, or maybe using another one that's charging significantly more than that. And I believe you've also put some really important resources for real estate owners and tenants when it comes to navigating these crazy times today on the website. So they can just go to avail.co and they'll find those resources, correct?
Yeah, that's right. We've got everything that landlords and renters need to know about COVID-19 available at avail.co/COVID-19. And we're also frequently updating those things and sharing them across all social media channels at @HelloAvail.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Ryan Kuhn, thank you so much for taking the time today. This was super valuable stuff. I wish you the absolute best. And man, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Mike. It was a lot of fun talking with you.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. As always, we'll see you next week. Take care.
be taking control, girl. We get a boy, girl. We could be taking control, girl. We get a boy, girl. We could be taking control, girl. We get a boy, girl. We could be taking control, girl. We get a boy, girl. We could be taking control, girl.